for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we're talking pet care, and we're starting by sharing how you can teach your dog to come when you call it, called recall. And we'll take your other pet care questions as well as we visit with Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, longtime friend, international speaker, author of several guides and books on training and behavior problems. And as we talk with Patricia, I hope you'll join in. What about your dog? What problems do you run into when teaching your dog to come when you call it? Does your dog get really excited outside and not seem to hear the sound of your voice? If you own a dog, you probably have experienced that at one point or another, and I hope you'll join in. Give us a call with your questions, comments. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Patricia McConnell, it's great to see you again.
Oh, it's always so good to see you, Larry.
I tell you, we've talked about this when we were doing Calling All Pets together. We talked about recall.
We did, because it's so basic to our relationship, right?
Yeah, and it's so important for your dog to come when you call its name.
It is. And, you know, it's the tricky thing about it is that it's not intuitive how to do it, because our culture and language is so different than a dog's. There's nothing a dog can do to another dog that's its natural language that says, come over here right away. There just doesn't exist in their vocabulary. So we have to train it really intentionally. So I can go through. Shall I go through some of my steps now?
You know, I loved your blog on the other end of the leash, which is an absolutely great blog. If you don't have that blog yet, you should look up the other end of the leash for sure.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah, that's...
I think the focus first was on prevention, if I'm not mistaken. Was that it?
Well, that's a really important thing to think about. And it's not intuitive. It's sort of not the way we behave. So if you haven't carefully taught your dog to stop what it's doing, turn around and come to you, which is three things, right? Those are three separate behaviors. If you haven't intentionally done that really carefully over time, then what we tend to do is just use it when we need it, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And then we get upset if they don't come. And then often, because we're primates, then we get loud and sort of gruff, and it's like, you know,
come.
Ginger, come. Right. Which is basically says, don't move and don't get any closer to me, to a dog, right? So the first thing to do is, if you have been using some kind of a cue, like come, say, and you haven't, it is not working as well as you want to, that cue is probably polluted. It's not serving you anymore. So come up with a different cue. I like to use short, rapidly repeated notes. So my generic come when called is bup, 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 bup. You know, my dissertation was partly on the structure of sound and how it affects behavior. So short, rapidly repeated notes. And the prevention part is, you want to start the training, Larry, when you know it's going to work. So they're close to you and they're not super distracted. And you call, pop, 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 pop. And then you turn and you go the other way. Give your dog space. Give your dog something to come to. Don't lean forward and walk forward like a primate, like, come, right? We lean forward. That blocks your dog. It's like a body block, I call it. So, pop, pop, pop. And then you turn around, move a few feet the other way. And you have a great reinforcement, whether it's food or play or run. Run away and let him chase you, clapping. Good dog, good dog. You can use a variety of reinforcements, but they better be good, right? Because we're talking about, hopefully, a dog who's going to come when called, when it is distracted. So the key is to start when you're going to win, start when you can't lose, and then build up this library. Build up this neurological bank of success. And you gradually increase the distance, but you don't increase distance if there's a lot of distraction. You think of it one thing at a time. You know, distance is one, distraction is another. How fast the dog is going away from you, that's a third one. So always start just pushing the envelope a little bit with one thing at a time.
Do you is this better done indoors and in the beginning?
I would start, if I got a new dog, puppy or older, if I got a new dog, I would do it everywhere, but I would do it where I couldn't lose. So you go outside and the puppy's just sort of, or the dog is sort of standing there looking around, maybe sniffing. Give it a minute to sniff, because when you change environments, there are a lot of dogs who they get their paws on the ground by sniffing. You know, we do it more by looking and sound. Those are important to dogs, but scent is so important to them. When I got Maggie, who's now 11, I got her when she was a little over a year old. And when you would put her in a new environment, she couldn't possibly respond to me. She was overwhelmed. So just give them a minute to sniff and then pop, 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 pop. And then you turn away. Say, you know, they're still on a leash. Turn away. Don't let the leash pop them, right? You don't want to punish them. Turn away a little bit. Turn your body away. Give them something to come to. And then as soon as they turn, Larry, that's the thing you want to reinforce. Don't wait till they get to you. You want to reinforce the first step in the right behavior. So as soon as they start to turn, good girl, good boy, move away, clap, clap, clap. Here's a piece of chicken. Here's a ball. You can chase me. Oh, I'm going to give you the best little belly rub you've ever had. But be sure your petting is actually something dogs like. By the way, a lot of people pet their dogs in ways that dogs are like, I was punished for doing that. I hate my head getting patted. So be sure you have a good reinforcement.
Then what?
Then you start where you can't lose. And then, and I would, you know, with a new dog, I would do that anywhere I was 3 to 5 times a day. And you don't make it like a training session. It's just part of life because that's when you want to use it. So you're walking to another room and I'd say, pop, 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 pop. Good girl, and give her a treat. I'd be outside, and we're on a walk, and she's on a leash, and she's sort of looking around, but she's not super distracted. I do the same thing. Then start asking her to come when she's farther away, where there aren't a lot of distractions. And you gradually build over time so that you get a reliable response. If you're getting like a 80-90% response, then kick it up. Make it harder. It's sort of like going to school. You know, each grade you're expected to do better and solve harder math problems, right? Yeah. More difficult reading. So think of it that way. It's like high school. It's like elementary, you know, middle school, high school. You're gradually making it harder and harder. You're always going to reinforce coming in early stages. Don't ever not reinforce it for a while, but vary the reinforcements. Now, here's the kicker. At some point, you're going to call your dog to come. You're going to say, pop, 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 or whatever you choose, and your dog's not going to come. So and it's easy to just like, it's so easy for me to just like, oh, well, you know, that didn't work. Don't do that. What you want to do is you go to your dog. And hopefully at this stage of training, you have something great in your pocket. You have the favorite toy. You have some great treats. So you go to your dog where your dog is, and you show your dog the wonderful thing you have, and then you back away, and you lure them to you, and then you reinforce them. So you're always basically saying you are going to get – there's something you have to do afterwards. I'll help you do it, right?
Yeah.
But that's what has to happen after you hear this noise. The last thing I'll say is be realistic. You know, we are not talking about sending a field beagle out into the woods by itself while chasing a rabbit and expecting it to come when you say pop, 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 pop. You really need to be realistic. I expect my border collies to drop when I say lie down, to come, wheel around when I say come. I had a Great Pyrenees. I would never have taken her off leash in a strange place in the woods somewhere. She's a Great Pyrenees. I wouldn't do it with a beagle. I didn't, you know, I was very careful with my Cavalier, who was 95%, but not 99.99% like my border collies. So always be realistic, you know, protect your dog, keep your dog safe, but keep building on this cue. It's so great to have a dog come when you call because then they can have more freedom.
Yeah. Right? I think the problem is, and I've heard you mention this in the past too, is that we get in a hurry. And we don't go slowly enough.
Oh, you're so right to point that out. We all do it, right?
Yeah.
what it happens so often with training. You've been working really hard. And by the way, there's actually research on this. Somewhere around 3 to 4 weeks, we'll start a new habit. And then somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks, they're like, yeah, well, we're done with that now. That was working great. But yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. It takes energy. And so it's easy to think you're farther along than you are. So you'll get a dog responding really well. And then you sort of drop the reinforcements, you drop thinking about it. So Maggie's 11 and Skip is 7. They are highly trained border collies, right? I still, every once in a while, on an off-leash walk off the farm, I will call them, come to me. I will run the other way going like, Jim, come on, run with me. Come on, come Jim, come. To get both of us to run away from them. And then I will give them liver treats when they get to me. And I'll do that like once every 6 or 7 times. I'm always reinforcing it.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today, and we have some callers online. Let's take a call from Stephen Eau Claire. Stephen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a standard poodle who likes to chase the ball, but when she comes back, she doesn't want to drop it. And it just kind of stops the game because I have to trick her or stop and let her, you know, rest and drop it and go get it. I just like to teach her how to come back with the ball and drop it so I can throw it again.
I love this question. And I especially love that it's a standard poodle. I consider, now this is obviously a big generalization, but I considered standard poodles to be some of the smartest dogs out there. Difference with other really smart dogs like border collies is standard poodles, in my experience, just saying, so please call and correct me if you have a different experience. Standard poodles are like, I'm killer smart. How can I beat the system? You know, border collies tend to be like, oh, what can we do together? You know, poodles are like, okay, can I teach him to fetch the ball? I guess I can, right? So, but here's what you do, because I had a border collie who did the same thing. So here's what you do. You get two, say it's a tennis ball. You get two tennis balls. One is hidden somewhere in your back pocket or somewhere. You throw the ball. And first of all, run away from your dog as your dog is moving towards you to get her more freer to come, you know, closer and closer to you. So play sort of hard to get, right? Sort of run around a little bit like, oh, can't get up to me. And then when it's dropped, when the ball is dropped, hopefully at your feet, you have the other ball, right? You take out the other ball and you throw it. And now that's you could just do that. That would be a management technique, and management is great, right? However, what you can do is gradually over time, you can take that other ball out and show it to her. And if she drops it, then you throw that other ball. Then you can show it to her and put your hand out to get her to put the ball in your hand. Ooh. And you can train that. It's absolutely trainable. We could do it. Oh, I wish. Where are you? Can I? We could do it in, 3 10-minute sessions. Does that make sense? I hope that feels like something you can do.
It does make sense, and yes, I can do that.
All right.
Let us know.
Good luck, Stephen.
Yeah, go out right now. Do that. Come back in 20 minutes.
And see if it worked. It'll work. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today, by the way, and Tyler Dinner, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller. For Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at training your pet. We've looked at getting it to come when you call it. We've answered some other questions as well. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or concerns. Carol in Marinette emailed us, Patricia. They adopted a lovely puppy back in November. She's Pound and German Shepherd Cross, adopted from the Green Bay shelter. She's been a lovely puppy, very quiet. Recently, she started to dig a hole in their backyard. This just started a few days ago, but she keeps going back to the same place wanting to dig the hole. Is there a way they can nip this in the bud so the behavior doesn't continue? They have refilled the hole. Is there something they can do or can put in it that might repel or discourage this behavior? What do you think?
Oh, I love this question. I'm so glad you asked, because dogs love to dig. They just love it, right? And there are a lot of really good conversations right now about how dogs are working so hard to adapt to our society, to our culture, to living in suburbs or living in cities, and how hard it is for them and how little natural behavior they actually get to do. And so digging is, I will say, a great behavior. Now, I will also say there are plenty of places I so don't want my dogs to dig in. Thank you very much. And they also get filthy, muddy paws, right, which come right into your house. So the first thing I would do is I would just cover that hole with a piece of plywood or something. Just cover it. But there's nothing wrong with encouraging her. I didn't hear. I'm sorry. She probably said, but I didn't notice. Be a little German Shepherd cross.
Yeah.
To dig somewhere that's appropriate. So I've advised a lot of people to find a place your dog can dig that's okay with you, right? You know, it's behind something. It's not ugly. It's not the muddiest place in the entire world, although that's going to be an issue, right? Find a place your dog can dig. And I have done that myself. First, you dig up a little area to loosen the soil. I've even added sand in there. You literally make like a digging sandbox for your dogs. And then you bury toys in there or something interesting. I love, and people just think this is ridiculous, but I don't care. I will go dig myself. I get on my hands and knees, and I start dig, 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 dig. And the neighbors have a lot to talk about. You have stories to tell your grandchildren. So that's a possibility. Now, if the digging is about a critter, I mean, that's, you know, the question is, why is she digging? Is it something besides dogs love to dig? It's certainly a great stress releaser for dogs. You know, dogs need to dig and they need to chew, you know, especially chewing. So I don't know how old she is, but say if
puppy.
She's...
Puppy. She was a puppy, back in November purchase.
But we can use puppy, you know, very loosely, right?
Yeah.
So, but if she was a real puppy in November, she'd be an adolescent now. And that's a hard time for dogs as it is for people. So she might be going through a lot of physiological stresses. Dogs really do too. And so that might be sort of a stress reliever. So you might want to think about that. Is she sort of getting a little stress relieved? Does she need to sort of run around more? Does she need some kind of more freedom? Sort of look at her life and see what kind of autonomy, what kind of freedom, what kind of stress relief she has, what kind of play she's getting. And then think about the appropriate digging place. And if you, by the way, if you make it sand, a little sandier, it's easier to clean their paws off.
That's why you put the sand in
there. Because I sympathize a lot, especially today, right? Raining outside, muddy, muddy, a lot of muddy paws. We have a lot of muddy paws at my house. Do not come and judge my floor. Just saying.
Oh, man. Benita in Hatley, we'll go to you. Hi, Benita.
Thank you. I have a 2-year-old. He is half Maremma sheepdog, came from a shelter. And in most ways, he's doing really well, and we've been through lots of different training courses, but his big issue is when someone comes to the door, he barks his head off, races to the door, climbs up the window in the door, and he would frighten anyone away if they were trying to come in. But I would like him to get that under control, and I've been working with him by having him go to his bed and wait in the bed until he is told that he can come out. And he will do that under duress if I am right there, but otherwise not.
Well, you're making great strides. I mean, really, you're doing everything right. You're just in the beginning phases, right? But good for you. And one thing that's really important that I think you're doing is acknowledging that you have a guard dog. Maremmas, for people who don't know, Maremmas are one of the big, beautiful, white, fluffy, gorgeous sheep guarding dogs. They don't herd sheep. They live with sheep. But their job is to protect the territory, and they do it by barking. They almost never have to fight with a critter our Great Pyrenees, I know of no circumstance in which they ever were physically involved except when one intervened with a ram who was bashing me, really hurting me, and she came in and bit his nose and got him off of me. Otherwise, she barked, and that's all she did. It kept the coyotes away. So you got a barker, right? And that's what that dog is going to be. So I love the go-to-a-bed place. And I would also say that's asking a lot of your dog. Forget your instincts, you know, forget what you were bred to do. Go back away from the door, lie there and stay until I tell you it's okay. What about a crate? This would depend on your dog being comfortable in a crate. But crates can be great. I have them. The dogs aren't in them very often anymore, but they love them because when they go in their crates, they get treats and wonderful things. And if I say crate, they literally would knock you over to run in their crate. And they're very comfortable in there. They don't bark. They just cuddle or lie down, go to sleep. They're very comfortable, which I trained. So that's probably beyond this phone call, but I would suggest a crate that makes it easier for your Marima cross to just like, okay, I can't do anything else, right, from here. So I'm just, you know, I'm not going to fuss about it. I'm not lying on my bed quivering.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would work towards that. Keep working on the bed when it's easier for your dog, but just keep it up. You're just in phase one. That's all.
Benita, good luck. Thank you for calling. Zach in Muskego will give you a chance. Hi, Zach. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. So I have a 5-month, he's going on 6-month-old corgi. And my question is, my workplace allows dogs, but there's a sanitary aspect to the workspace that I work in. So he would have to be at the front of the shop or the back of the shop. I was just wondering if there are things that I can work on at home with him to make it easier for me to have him in that space while he can be around but not right next to me.
So you'd be in the middle? You wouldn't be in the front of the shop or the back of the shop? You'd be in the middle?
Yeah, he would be able to hear me, but he wouldn't be able to see me.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, and it's a dog-friendly place, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So that's good. So, no, I think this is very doable, depending on the dog. I think there are a few dogs out there, maybe if they had a little clingy, a little separation anxiety, perhaps might be a little harder for them. But for most dogs, first of all, I would, if you can, I would take him into the office, the shop, when you're off, you know. So you can just take him in, let him sniff around. You're going to have to house train him because a dog that young, they very often, they're house trained to your house, but they're not house trained. They don't generalize it. They don't know, oh, you meant all buildings. You didn't tell me that. I didn't understand, you know. So you always have to be sure that he gets the concept, which really is a concept, right, if you think about it, that, oh, it's all indoor places where I'm not supposed to lift my leg. So so work on that. Make sure he pees before you go inside. Watch him like a hawk when you do go inside. And just let him walk around. And while he's still pretty – I would say he's too young to just leave in the front room or the back room without you, without easing him into it. I would ease any dog into it, but I would give him a little more time too. You might run into his adolescence, and corgis, I love corgis. They are full of themselves. I mean, they were bred to work cattle, right? They're like 15 inches high or something, and they're bred to work cattle. They got a lot of chutzpah in them. So sometimes when they get to be adolescent, they're a little trickier to deal with. So, you know, think about sort of who he is, where he is in his training, where he is in his behavior with you, about when it's right to introduce him to being in the shop. But start, again, by just gradually introducing him there, sort of take him all the places you go, get him used to it, lots of treats, meets everybody, gets comfortable, maybe the other dogs, make sure that goes well. And then gradually, when you have time, and again, this is a time sink on your part, because I don't want you to go there and work all day and have your dog away from you for 8 hours the first time, right? the best thing to do is to ease him into it. So if you could go in and just, you're not really working, it's Saturday, right? Or, you know, it's your day off. So you go in, you give him maybe a stuffed Kong, you give him some kind of a great chew toy that he absolutely adores. You walk him around, you put him in the front room, you keep the door open if you can. I don't know if they let you put a gate up. Maybe you don't keep the door open, but you're really close by, and he's really busy on his toy. And then you go back in 5 minutes, and you go, hey, bud, how you doing? And then you give him something else wonderful, and then you go back for 5 minutes, and then that's it. That's session number one, where he's in one room and you're in another. And then just like cum training, you gradually increase it. As best your timing, you know, this is a lot of time on your part, but if you're ideally, that's what you do. So you gradually increase the time, and how fast you go completely depends on him. I mean, he's going to run that system, right? If he's comfortable and fine, there's other people for him to talk to. Yeah, but I would bring a dog bed that he sleeps on in the house that smells like him, that's a sleeping place. I would bring that into the shop and just leave it there. So have him his own dog bed. That smells right. Scent is so important, right? So anything that smells like home will be really helpful, keeping him in the room that's beside you, but not right beside you.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Zach, good luck. Appreciate the call. Well, we had, you mentioned separation anxiety, just sort of in passing, talking about things. And Mac and Stoughton, her dog, a 4-year-old pug rescue, has separation anxiety, hates to be alone. Things like specialty bones and medication hasn't helped. He gets plenty of exercise. Right now, Mac works from home, but her time away is starting to increase, which is probably true for a lot of people. He doesn't chew or pee. He just waits at the window with his heart racing. She's considering getting him a dog friend. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, it's a tough one. I feel your pain. It's separation anxiety can be so anxiety producing for humans because one, you know, your dog is suffering and you feel guilty about leaving and, you know, you're worried about the dog. A lot of people are worried about their house because it gets sometimes ripped up into shreds because the dog is so anxious and nervous. So let me address the get another dog issue first.
Okay.
That's a really tricky one because here's what I would say. Yes, it is absolutely true that in some cases, probably even many cases, I have no real number for you, but probably over 50%, but I'm making that number up, right? Having another dog there does help. However, one, you need to decide if you want another dog. I mean, that's job one, because two dogs are not twice the work of one.
Yeah.
They're like four times the work, in my opinion. Now, sometimes it's great. You get less work because they exercise each other. They play together, right? So it can be less. But they also teach each other bad habits. And it's just, you know, don't get a second dog unless you feel like, you know, I would really like another dog. Because you have the risk of, okay, we adopted a dog from a rescue organization or a shelter, and they seemed to get along at the meeting at the shelter, and they were fine for the first 3 days, and now the new dog is growling at my dog, and now I have another, you know, and now what do I do, right? You know, or they get in a fight, or they just don't like each other. Dogs are exactly like us. They just make best friends instantly and just dislike each other instantly. Sometimes
I remember you telling me about two of your dogs that seemed to be getting along just fine, but then one passed away and the other seemed relieved or happy.
Exuberant. Exuberantly joyful. Good memory. Yes, good memory, Larry. That was Misty and Lassie. And yeah, and I had no idea how difficult it was for Lassie. They never fought. Misty never growled at her, but she'd get that hard eye, and I'd be like, Misty, get back and lie down. So I managed it. Anyway, so a lot of potential pitfalls with that. So let me ponder that and decide what's best for you. If you decide not to get another dog, then, oh my goodness, it's hard for me to say too much more without knowing what you did. You said you worked with a veterinarian with medication?
There was some medication involved, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just checking back now. Gets plenty of exercise, medication, and specialty bones, she mentioned as well.
Okay. So one, about the point of exercise, regrettably, lots of exercise does not seem to have any effect whatsoever on separation anxiety. And think about it. You know, if you're terrified of something, because separation anxiety is a profound fear of being left alone. And if you're profoundly afraid of snakes or spiders, is it going to help you if you go out and run beforehand? Probably not, right? So don't worry about the fact of how much exercise your dog is getting or not getting in terms of the separation anxiety. I would go back to your veterinarian, perhaps get a referral to a veterinary behaviorist, because there are a lot of different medications that can be used. That's a veterinary perspective.
Yeah.
But some of the veterinary behaviorists, there are not very many of them. They're scattered around the country. Talk to your veterinarian, though, about having she or he can have a consult with a veterinary behaviorist. Just have them give a call, like, what medication would – I tried one. It's not helping. What would you use? So that's one thing I would do. And the other is the standard behavioral modification that I've used. It's very successful in most cases, not all, but most, is it's a kind of a counter conditioning. So you give your dog something you know that he or she absolutely cannot resist. So it's chopped steak stuff inside of a Kong or something. You know, it's just the best thing ever. And before you even leave the house, you do several sessions, maybe over a period of weeks even, where you get your keys and you put it down. And then you pick it up, and then you put your keys away and you sit down. So you need to figure out, if you're going to do a behavior mod, you need to figure out the triggers. And the triggers are usually long before you leave the house. So figure out what the triggers are. Does she get nervous when I'm brushing my hair? Does she get nervous when I put a jacket on? Is it the keys? What is the trigger that gets that anxious, scared look on your dog's face? And start conditioning that and just that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you gradually work your way up. So you actually get your keys, get your jacket, go to the door, put your hand on the doorknob. That's it. Come back, take away the toy. So do you see the progression, Larry? This is all making sense. You just gradually work your way up to being gone 30 seconds on the other side of the door, and then longer and longer. The good news is that you have to spend – the bad news is you have to spend a lot of time in the early phases, and you feel like this is ridiculous. I'm just picking up my keys and putting them down, right? You have to spend a lot of time on the first triggers and the early short periods of time where you're gone. But then once you can be out of the house for literally a minute, then you can often go to 5, and then you can go to 15, and then you can go to an hour, and then you can go to 2. It's that first early, oh no, they're leaving, I'm going to be alone. That's what you have to counteract.
Very good advice. Again, let's go to Terry in North Lake. Terry, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, Larry. Larry, we have an 8-year-old border collie that was brought into a shelter to be euthanized.
Oh.
And the shelter called us and asked us if we could take it and work with the dog. From what we know in the previous life, it basically just ran loose. So, and we've corrected a lot of the behavior that the dog had, but one of the things is the compulsive want to chase cars. And we have a small farm, so I have a 4-wheeler. You know, I can't even start it. The dog just goes crazy, circles and runs around. And of course, it's on a leash, and it'll jump up, turn around. I could offer it a porterhouse steak.
Got it. I believe you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Totally believe you. I've seen it. I hear you. I sympathize for you. So, you know, here's a dog whose breed was bred specifically to be hyper attentive to movement and to stop it. I mean, that's what border collies do, literally. They stop forward movement. that's their main reason for being. So, I mean, and the few litters a million years ago that I bred, I mean, little five-week-old puppies when you walked would, like, run around and bite your feet. And just, you know, these little tiny fluff balls would, like, all of a sudden be, like, right on top of your foot in front of you because they'd run around to the front and stop you from moving forward. So you and sounds like this dog has done it probably his or her entire life. So this is not going to be, I mean, you already know this is not an easy fix by any means. Okay, what would I do if it was my dog or you were my client? Well, first of all, one of the first things always to look at with a serious behavioral problem is management. So I think the first thing I would say to me or you, whoever is dealing with this dog, is how can you prevent this from happening? Because every time it happens, it sort of increases the habit, right? It deepens the channel between neurons, right? It just makes it more and more likely the dog's going to do it again. So that's the first thing I do. So I would, it sounds like, you know, you have country, the dog is loose a lot. I would find a place where you can put your dog away in a fine place, right? The dog is comfortable there. He's not going to go crazy. You put the dog in a kennel, you put the dog in a crate, you put the dog in the house, and then you go out in your four-wheeler. That's step number one, is just manage it. There's nothing wrong with that. The other thing I do that I've seen a ton of border collie peoples do, I've never done it. I know so many people who teach their dogs to ride on the four-wheeler. They can't, they're not chasing now, right? They're not trying to stop something. They're just part of the party. So that's something else to think about. Is you, obviously, there's a safety issue here. You know, yeah. I can imagine some people saying, like, what are you telling this man to do? You have to be really careful. A lot of my friends have, like, a big sort of metal basket thing in the back that the dog has to stay in. Some of them, the dogs just stay there. Some of the dogs are actually, when they're young, they are actually affixed to that area, so they can't possibly fall out, right? They can't get hurt. You have to be really thoughtful, super, super careful. So safety is huge here, but it can probably be done. And it literally eliminates the problem because the dog is like, I'm part of the party now, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not chasing it. I'm not biting at tires and, you know, almost causing a wreck and getting myself run over by something. So that's probably my first two pieces of advice. So hopefully those will be helpful.
Terry, good luck. Appreciate your call very much. Christina in Glenwood, we'll go to you. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I was given about a one-year-old abused shelter dog about 11 months ago, and she was very difficult. Initially, I felt like I made a huge mistake adopting her. Mm. So I decided that I always wanted to catch her doing something good. So I placed treats in a small open dish everywhere throughout the house so I could give her quick rewards. So with patience and positive training, she's earned her Canine Good Citizen certification.
Yay!
I'm training her for service so I can take her everywhere. My goal is just to enrich her life as a dog, and she has become a welcome family member. So it all works out.
See me clapping and cheering and leaping up and down, too. Christina. I'm so glad you called, because your point is just essential, that what you did is you captured what you wanted. You were prepared. You had treats everywhere. Now, with some dogs, you have to watch out because, you know, they climb up the couch and up, you know, the table to get to the treats. But you figured out a way that you could reinforce her when she was doing something you want. And that is the absolute essential key. It's the gold standard to getting the behavior you want. We are so programmed. I'm not quite sure why, but this is how we all tend to be. To wait until a dog does something wrong, and then punish it, even if it's just like, no, you know, you cut that out, right? One of my mantras was when people would say my dog does X and they didn't want them to do X, I'd say, well, what do you want your dog to do? And then that's what we'd work on. And so your method of just observing and always being aware, well, what do I want her to do? And reinforcing it at that time, right then and there, is effective, builds relationships, smart, and admirable. So, like, can we, like, send her something? I don't know. Do we have, like, a gold medal or something? And thank you so much for bringing it up. I love it. It's a great call and a great topic.
Christina, thank you so much. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. We were talking earlier about her wonderful blog, The Other End of the Leash, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about training and working with your pet with our guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. It's always great to have her with us. She's written a number of books that I'm betting a lot of you have read, some of them. The Other End of the Leash is one of her books, but is also the name of her blog. And you might tell you that blog is great. You might want to take a look at it. For the Love of a Dog was another of her books. The Education of Will, another one. And you have another one coming out, but it's a different kind of book.
It's a totally different kind of book. I decided years ago I wanted to try my hand at fiction, which is really hard and so different than nonfiction. It's great, Larry, because anything can happen, right? At any moment in time, at any line, after any sentence, anything can happen, which is so cool. And so horrible, because you have to decide every single thing, anyway. So, and then I decided to write a mystery because I love mysteries, and that's challenging because you have to have the whole thing figured out, right? So you can drop little breadcrumbs. Anyway, I have been working on it for quite a number of years, and I just heard from my agent this morning, it's going out to publishers on Friday.
Woo!
Thank you. Yes, woohoo. Thank you. I am crazy excited. Now, I got to tell you, getting a fiction, this is my first fiction, so I'm a first-time fiction writer. I have a little more cred because I have, you know, one book in 12 or 13 languages. That helps a little bit. But, who knows? I mean, I may get several offers. I may get none. Who knows what will happen? But I will probably know in a couple of weeks, and I'm a little excited.
Well, I can't wait to read it and have you back to talk about it.
I can't wait. The bad news is going to be forever. I thought a year, that used to be standard, a year from signing the contract to it coming out. Now it's longer, like a year and a half or something. It's like, oh,
We're not getting any younger.
I know. It's like Larry and I were teasing before we started, like, where will we be a year and a half from now?
So you've got that book, and I did want to mention something else because I love the title of a speech that you're giving, Treat Everyone Like a Dog.
Isn't that a fun title? I borrowed that, with permission, by the way, from my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Karen London, who has a book out, absolutely one of my favorite books of all time, nonfiction. It's called Treat Everyone Like a Dog. And it basically talks about using what we know about learning and how you influence behavior in a really positive relationship-building way, and how to use that on your husband and your daughter, and the hardest one of all, yourself. So I borrowed that because I think it's brilliant. If you don't have the book, get it. But I'm giving a talk based on that. It's really fun. I gave it at Rotary a while back. We had so much fun with it. So, yeah, I'm speaking at Monona.
Senior Center.
Monona Senior Center. And I think that's April 17th.
Yep, April 17th at 10 a.m. at the Monona Senior Center on Nichols Road
They ask if you would be so kind if you're going to come. And please do. It's so much fun. Oh, I will have my large national books for sale, by the way. But if you would be kind enough to call them at 608-222-3415 just to let them know you're coming, because then we can get set up to accommodate people. So, yeah, I haven't given a ton of live talks since, the world changed, right? It's so fun. We're going to have a great time.
Well, I've seen you in action at those live talks, and they are a lot of fun. And I think, what was the number? 608-222-3145.
3415 or 3...
Oh, let me
look. Did I get it right? You better look. Did I transpose the numbers?
No, whatever you said is probably correct. I would look up the Monona Senior Center.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't want to bungle that. That wouldn't be cool. Here, while we're talking,
we'll have that
quick
number right while we get David from Grand Marsh online to listen here. David, hi.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. My question is kind of directed towards your guest, Patricia. She has experience with the Great Pyrenees. My wife and I just recently adopted a pair from the Pyrenees Rescue here in Wisconsin. And first time I've owned the breed, and I'm learning a lot, even being 3 years into having them. And I kind of want to know what can I expect to achieve in basic off-leash, you know, training commands, or like heel, sit down. I can get them to sit and even, you know, shake when there's a treat involved, but, you know, in their big fenced yard, they don't want anything to do with that.
And so
if you could kind of, I heard you talk a little bit earlier about the not so much a verbal command, but like a voice command. And just wanted to get your thoughts on how successful or to what extreme that you have been able to train your great pair.
Oh, well, first, congratulations. That's so fun that you've got two pairs. I love them so much. So, yeah, I'm guessing one of the things you want them to do is to come out of the yard when you call them?
Correct.
Okay, got it. Yeah, and who wouldn't? And I'm not at all surprised that this is challenging because, well, let's see, a couple of standard lines. One of the classic lines about Great Pyrenees is, what do you call a Great Pyrenees off a leash? A disappear. They were bred to be extremely independent. They were bred to be focused on the environment. They were bred to be always guarding the perimeter. And so you're always working on that, right? Now, as you know, I love that you remembered that I had Pierce too, Bo Peep and Tulip. And I worked really hard on come training, but I never, ever, ever would have, like, taken them, you know, outside in a woods or something that wasn't fenced. I never would have done that. But you definitely want them to come when you call in your fenced yard, right? So it's a little harder with two. Because it's just, I don't know, it's like having two kids sort of getting together to work around the rules, you know. It's like they've got a teammate, they got a homie on their side, right? So the first thing I want to ask you, what kind of, you said no, you know, treats aren't working. What kind of treats are you using?
We'll use the, I'm trying to think of the name of them. It has a picture of the wolf on it. They're like tender, almost like jerky chunks.
Okay.
And just basic dog biscuits.
They'll
respond to that as well.
And if you had a Labrador, you know, most Labradors, no matter what was happening, that would work. So I would literally go to real meat. I would cook up a bunch of chicken. I would cook up a bunch of beef, you know, just get real meat. And then I would start, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the program, but I would start with my recall training protocol where you, first of all, come up with a different cue because the one you're using, if it's not working, they're already trained to not always listen to it. Come up with a new cue that you're only going to use it initially when you know it will work. So you're 2 feet away from them, you have a piece of steak in your hand, and you say pup up or whatever your cue is. And when they turn their head, you say, good for you. You move back a little bit to get them to move 2 paces or so to you, and then you give them a treat. So I would start as if they were puppies, with the exception of come up with a new signal that comes out of your mouth really fast and easily. You know, whistles are used a lot in sheepdog training because whistles carry so well over varied terrain, you know, through space. Your voice gets degraded really easily. So if you're a really great whistler or you have a whistle, you know, you can use that short, rapidly repeated notes, doot, 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 doot. That's helpful to get an animal going. But I would basically start as if they were puppies, except I would come up with a new cue. You could also use competition. So whoever gets to you first gets all the treat, and then the second one is like, oh, you weren't here soon enough. I'm sorry. You might show them the treat, go like, oh, next time. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. You have to be really thoughtful about that. But basically, that I would up the reinforcement. And one thing you can do is called the use what's called the Premack principle. Premack was a psychologist who basically said that anything that has a high probability of happening, so let's just say that a high probability of a Great Pyrenees behavior is barking at the fence, all right? So that dog is telling you that's what he wants to do. So you can use that as a reinforcement, right? Call him to come, give him a treat, and then say, okay, let him go bark at the fence for a minute or two. So use the Premack principle. Look it up. It's actually a really, really handy thing to use.
And that phone number is, as you called it, 608-222-3415.
For the Monona Center.
For the Monona Senior Center. And we can talk about that some more, but we need to take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Patricia McConnell right up till 12:30. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mealer. Thanks for being with us here on WPR. Larry Mealer here talking about pet behavior today, your pet's behavior maybe, with our guest Patricia McConnell. She is a certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, a local speaker, author of several guides on training and behavior problems, got a great blog called The Other End of the Leash. She is here to answer your questions, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas at WPR.org. Jill says her dog is really good at coming when I whistle, except when he's interacting with a dog or dogs at a dog park. If there are no other dogs, he comes right away. How should I train him for that? At the dog park, maybe?
I hear you. I mean, you know, the comes when called, except when absolutely critically necessary, right? And, of course, from his perspective, he's basically, you call him to come, and they're basically like, the internal canine conversation is, I hear you, just a minute. I'll be right with you.
Yeah.
I'm busy. I'll be right with you, just a minute. So, yeah, so this is like, you know, we had talked earlier about recall training being sort of like going through school, you know, as you get given harder and harder material. So, you know, you're now in like senior high school, maybe college, right? This is really, really, this is like high, high level distraction. So the first thing I would do is try and set it up with dogs you know, because I want you to use something really, really wonderful, like a piece of chicken or a piece of meat, you know, some really great, fabulous food, like the best food your dog has ever had. And you're going to use that. So you set it up with dogs you know. Maybe not at the dog park. Maybe you could do it in your yard, somebody else's yard. And you call them to come when there's, you know, not in the middle of a really hot and heavy play date, right? But maybe they're just sniffing each other and hanging out. They've had a minute to sort of say hi. Then you call your dog to come, and you call when you're very close to your dog. You call holding your hand out with waving the piece of chicken in the air. And then you sort of lure him away, and you move away a little bit. Good dog, good dog, good dog. The other dog comes too. Fine, give him a treat. Obviously, you have to be sure there's no food possession aggression between these two dogs.
Yeah.
That's why I want you to do at home first.
Got
I don't
it.
Want you to do this at dog park because, you know, you get some piece of chicken out there. Some other dogs that you don't know, yeah, might get a little like, you know, hey, that's my chicken, and get a little aggressive about it. So do it with dogs you know that you're comfortable with, and start there again. So start low distraction, very little distance, and reinforce, and then gradually you be farther away. Gradually the dogs are a little more excited. So I would then, if if you're getting a really great response to that, and then you're at the dog park and he's sniffing a dog you don't know, rather than going right to him with a treat, because I'm a little worried about a little risky, right?
Yeah.
So I want you to go partway to him, get a lot closer, hold your hand out so he can see it, because that's sort of become a bit of a visual cue. It's not going to mean anything to the other dog necessarily, but you hold your hand out and then you move a little bit away, luring the dog to you, and give him lots of treats. So, and then if what he really wants, again, using that PREMAC principle, the highest probability behavior is the best reinforcement you can find, is what he wants to be doing is interacting with this other dog. So you say, pup, 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 or whatever, lure him away, give him a treat, and then you say, okay, he can go back and sniff that other dog. And you can even do that one or two times in a row. So you're using what he most wants to do, which is interact with other dogs, as a reinforcement. So you can use chicken, that's great, but he's telling you, this is what I want to be doing right now. So there's nothing wrong with letting him go back to do it for some period of time as a reinforcement. So that's how I taught some of my border collies to come when called, when they were running away from me. I actually teach a stop or a lie down. The dog's running. Really, the first thing you need to do is get them to stop, right?
Yeah.
So I teach a stop or a lie down. And so one of the ways that I say Maggie and Skip are playing tug really, really vigorously, and it's raining, and I'm tired, and it's time for them to stop anyway. And rather than calling them come, I'll just say lie down, and they'll both stop. It's like, oh, yeah, we know that cue. And then they're sort of lying down looking at me, and then I'll usually say, leave it, drop the toy, and then I'll call them to come, something like that. So you can build on that. So that's the idea. Just start safely, but again, use the PREMAC principle.
Yeah.
Whatever the dog wants, what the highest probability, you would bet money the dog would do X during that period of time. That's the reinforcement if you can do it safely.
Katie in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Katie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I have three dogs, and my third I adopted about a year and a half ago. She's a Chihuahua mix, and I noticed, well, she was pretty fearful right at first, but then she warmed up to our family. But whenever she hears sirens, she gets really scared, and instead of running to us to be comforting her, she'll run to my two other dogs that are bigger, and they don't really like it. She licks their face, and they kind of show their teeth and growl at her. Then eventually she'll flip on her back, and then they kind of calm down. But I'm wondering, what can I do to get her to stop running to them for reassurance, or I don't know.
Well, yeah, let's think. I mean, that's a great question, and I think you're really wise to, like, you know, let's just sort of take that tension away where she's sort of basically, from the other dog's perspective, harassing them, and she's just like trying to get solace from them. I'm scared, right? What do you think you would have to do to get her to come to you?
I try. I definitely tried calling her really high, like, hey, Peter, come on, come on, come on, come on. And she just, there's nothing to stop her from going to try to get the reassurance from the other two dogs. And I do know at the rescue, she was with another Chihuahua mix that they wanted to separate her from. She was probably pretty codependent on her, so I'm wondering if she had that kind of relationship with that dog.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. You know, as much as dogs love us, we are still aliens to them, right? We don't speak dog. We don't, you know, we can't. Something's profoundly wrong with our noses, you know. Who the heck are we, right? So if she's used to getting solace from other dogs, it makes sense in so many different ways, right? So I guess one thing I would try is I would see if you could go right to, what happens if you just go to her and pick her up and soothe her in some way? What happens? Does she not like that? Does she object?
It doesn't seem to calm her down, but she's okay with it until, like, the sirens eventually stop, and then she's like, okay.
Does she love food? Like great food, like chicken or steak?
Yeah, chicken, yeah.
Okay. I would cook up some chicken, and the next time there's a siren, I would go get the chicken. I would go get her. And, Kathy, I would pick her up, and I would have chicken in the other hand, like, see what I got, honey? See what I got? And I would take her over somewhere else away from the other dogs, and I would give her some chicken, but I would also soothe her, like, good girl. Good girl. It's okay. long, slow notes like that. Good girl. Maybe some belly rubs. I like to rub dogs between their eyes, you know, that little area between their eyebrows up towards the top of their head. That's really soothing to some dogs.
Mm.
So see if she can get her solace from you by using your voice, the way you touch her, long, slow strokes in the right places, and, you know, food.
Mm-hmm.
Always food. See if those things can redirect her looking for solace to you rather than the other dogs.
And good luck, Katie. Thank you very much for calling. Jim and Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, guys. Hi, thanks for taking my call. So we've got a 4-year-old standard poodle, and we have a very long driveway. We live out in the country. And when UPS or FedEx comes, she has no fear of vehicles. And she'll run right in front of it, or sometimes even when I'm driving the UTV up, you know, in the trail, she'll be running in front of me, and then she'll get in front of me. And I've tried a handheld air horn, like, you know, like a basketball game, to try to startle her to see if that'll help. And sometimes it helps, but she still does it. And I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do.
Yeah, well, yeah, because that's so dangerous. I mean, that's just so scary, right? So a couple of things you could try. I mean, you know, the first thing I always go to is management, right? Mm-hmm. So is your dog, Jim, is your dog loose outside all the time? So what's the story there?
Yeah, so she's off leash a lot of the time. And when we're outside working around the property, she'll be off leash.
Okay.
She's never on leash at by our house. We're on like 40 acres.
Yeah, gotcha. I hear you. So that is the dog. I go right back to the beginning of my of this talk of Larry and me's program today and with the recall training. So I want her to have just a dynamite recall. And you're going to have to work really hard because you're going to want to call her away from something she is absolutely dedicated to doing, right? So start like she was a puppy. Start really easy. Never ask, you know, stop trying to get her to come away from the FedEx truck. Go get her, right? Put her on a leash and put her in the house or something. Don't try it for a long time in the situation that you're trying to fix, right? Because she has a habit of doing it. The thing I have a border collie who loved when I first got him to get in front of my four-wheeler. So, and again, it's that forward motion, right? I want to stop forward motion. Maggie never did it, but Skip is like, I'm stopping this. And finally, what I did is he would get start to get in front of it, and I would scream like I'd been horribly injured. And I won't do it now because Tyler, the engineer, is a really nice guy. I will not do that to him. But imagine me shrieking sort of at the loudest, highest pitched, horrible, girly, you know, panic noise you could imagine. And Skip, who is a very sound sensitive border collie, was like, what? What? What happened? And I was trying to say, basically, you're going to be doing that if you don't stop this, because I don't want to run you over, right? But it was incredibly helpful. So with the FedEx truck, I would use management for a while you're working on recall training. And I would teach that any dog who's outside, I believe, who's loose off leash, needs a stop or a lie down.
Yeah.
And needs a recall. Because it's just, we know, it's dangerous out there. Stuff happens, right? Stuff happens. So I would work really hard on a lie down or a stop. And a recall, and then manage the FedEx, and just don't hesitate to just walk up to your dog, have a leash really handy, just put it on your dog, walk it back to the house, and just prevent that habit as much as you possibly can.
Jim, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Houston, Minnesota, and Lori next. Hi, Lori.
Good morning, or good afternoon. My question is this. I just got a 7-month-old male yellow lab, and he came to me from a friend already trained, really good, well, and his name he came with is BJ, and I'd like to change it to Lenny, and he's 7 months old. Do you think that's possible?
In a minute. in a minute. Well, maybe not a minute. Maybe a couple of weeks. It's so easy. My dog Skip came to me. His name was Ace. And I want a name that I can sort of clip out that has a nice, sharp consonant on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And he came with this little Skippy thing that he'd do when he was really happy. So I didn't want to be calling Ace. I don't know. It just didn't feel right to me. So I changed it to Skip. And you just treat him like his little puppy. So you say, you want to change it to Lenny? Was that right, Lenny? That's a great name.
Yes.
So you have treats in your pocket. You have his favorite ball. You have whatever he wants most. You call Lenny. He looks at you. He gets it. You run away. You give him a treat. You know, and you just do this scattered throughout the day. Don't do like training sessions. You want your dog to listen to you in every context throughout the day, right? So just do it throughout the day. Just sort of change your head around like, I am always doing this. Lenny, go treat. Lenny, treat. Lenny, you run away so he can chase after you. Lenny, you throw the ball. Lenny, I mean, basically what names mean is I'm focused on you as an individual and I want your attention. I mean, if I said Larry, right, or Lori, or somebody said Trisha, what do they want? They want my attention. So that's what you want to reinforce. You say, excuse me, you say Lenny, and he looks, good boy. And you give him a variety of reinforcements, not just food, not just play, everything you can think of that he really loves. And you can get this done in 1 to 3 weeks, if not sooner. Trivial, really easiest training thing in the world to do.
A dog that I care for, Lila, from time to time, which I love, I love her. She came to Madison 10 years old, and the person wanted to change her name, and that did not work.
It didn't work?
She gave up probably too soon, but really? Lila liked her name, I think, and seemed to be put out if she was called something else. This is a Staffordshire, big old dog.
Do they not know my name? What's wrong with these two-legged, strange alien things?
Perry and Okado, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
This is a frustrating problem. We've been working on it now for about 6 months. I have an English Springer Spaniel that we go out in the field, but every once in a while he'll get into deer, and there's basically no stopping him. His middle little paw goes up as you call him, and he runs by you. Any tips to kind of dissuade him from chasing deer?
Oh, man.
That has to be one of the hardest.
Yeah, it is a tough one. You know, you have a hunting breed, right? They're really focused on wildlife. And did you say this dog is about 8 months old?
No, he's about a year and a half.
Oh, okay, but you've had him. Okay.
And he usually has a fantastic recall. Comes the whistle and hand signals, he'll come back. But sometimes it's just too overpowering to get him to stop chasing deer.
Dangerous. It is. I feel your pain. It is so dangerous. It's bad for deer. But it's also just so dangerous for the dog. You know what I'd do? I would work on a lie down or a stop. That's what my 7-year-old border collie, he would be happy to chase deer in a minute. And because he's, you know, works in sheepdog trials, I have a stop on him. So every time he started to take off, and he will take off like a bullet. I mean a bullet. But I can say, lie down. And he will. But it has to be when he's close to me. I mean,
yeah.
I've always used it when I've never had him leave that far away, right? No, that's not true. Once he was way ahead of us, and he did, and I called and called, and he did come back, but I was a wreck. I was a nervous wreck. But he did come back. But the key is to you be always on alert. You know, you be like a wild animal walking in the woods. You are always on alert, and you're watching your dog. because your dog will alert, right? And you're listening, you're hearing, you know, the potential of deer rustle. The second you see or hear something, it's lie down. If you can stop that first impulse, you have a much, much higher chance of being successful. So that's the first thing I would do to this dog. And I would not take him out with me where he could chase deer for quite a while until I can get that handled. Yeah. So that's what I would do if it was my dog. That's what I would work on.
Perry, thank you and good luck. Appreciate it. Ron and Maureen in Baraboo, they have a five-month-old puppy that hates to have nails trimmed. Very reactive when they have to see the vet. How do you help her with this anxiety?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've had a lot of clients who had to deal with that. Veterinarians often, vet techs often have to deal with that. And I personally, I had my Maggie. I think I quicked her once. I was clipping them, and I think I quicked her a tiny bit. Oh, you would, oh my goodness gracious. The world ended that day. So I do a couple of things. One is I use a Dremel. It's like you grind them down rather than clipping. There's something about clipping, and I have a hypothesis, and that's all it is it's partly the noise. When you clip a dog's nails, there's like this loud click, which is designed to get attention. And I think it, you know, dogs startle when they hear it, so it makes things worse. So one, switch to a Dremel. But then the most important thing to do, Maggie now lies down her side and hands me her paw. Because I spend a lot of time doing what's called the bucket game. Look it up on the internet. I am so sorry. I forget the name of the great dog trainer who came up with the bucket game. He's so good. I'm so sorry. I forget his name. But go online, bucket game, dog training, you'll find it. Basically, it's giving the dog a tremendous amount of autonomy. So you're not going to get nails trimmed for a while. But what you're going to start doing is you lie your dog down. I use treats to lure Maggie into a position where she's lying on her side. And then I use treats to just pick a paw up and hold it in my hand. If she, now she is now looking at literally a bucket of treats. I literally have a treat jar that's clear. She can see them and they're right in front of her nose and she's looking at them. If she takes her head away from the buckets and looks at me like, what are you doing? Then I just take my hands away and I say, okay, I'm not going to do anything until she puts her head down again and looks at the bucket or just looks at it, at which point I give her a treat and then I pick up her paw. And if she keeps letting me hold her paw, then she gets a bunch of treats. So it's slow. It's gradual. I can't go through the whole thing with you. Look it up, the bucket game. It's brilliant and it saved my butt too. So hopefully it will save yours.
On that note, Patricia, we are out of time. Thank you so much. I do want to mention again the Monona Senior Center, where you'll be speaking Treat Everyone Like a Dog on Wednesday, April 17th. Number to call is to let them know you're coming, 608-222-3415. Thanks, Patricia. We'll do it again, I hope.
My pleasure. Hope so.
And I hope you'll stay with us here. Tomorrow we'll learn how to reduce food waste at home, and then we'll find out about efforts to save some trout streams in the Driftless area. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR.